It may be the top story of the day, but you don't have all the info you need until you hear what Bob has to say about it. Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Turn on your mic, idiot. Tuesday, January 10th, 2012, the radio program is on the air, on The Fan and on Sportsnet. Bob McCown with you. Elliot Friedman today? Cox tired? Did he work one day and does he need a day off? Where is he today? He's doing TV, but this is TV. This is getting ridiculous. Well, I'm happy Friedman's here. I mean, at least I have a co-host I like. Later, Mike Wan, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, will join us. Nick Kyprios will join us in studio. George Cortez is the new head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, leaves the Buffalo Bills. Joe Delamalur, Hall of Fame offensive guard for the Buffalo Bills. Hall of Fame goaltender, Ken Dryden, is Hall of Fame Day. And the managing general of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Scott Housen, will join us after firing his coach yesterday, Scott Arneal. What are you doing here again?
I was cleaning up, actually. I came in looking for something. Oh, I got it. Sorry.
We were...
I'm sorry.
We're short a guest, obviously.
You know...
Why are you on that mic so far away? Why don't you come on this mic over here?
That's a good question. Why don't I?
Shut that one off first, idiot. Otherwise, you'll get feedback. And then turn
this
on.
I knew that. I was over there because that's where I did the show this morning because we had some computer malfunctions, which I don't want to talk about.
So Jeff Blair, host of the Jeff Blair Show, starring Jeff Blair. Oh, so it says here you're here to talk about Barry Larkin. I thought we'd said everything there is to say about Barry Larkin.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about Barry Larkin. I didn't vote for Barry Larkin.
I beg your pardon?
No, I didn't vote for Barry Larkin.
What was it about Barry Larkin's career that you didn't like?
Well, more than anything, it was, I don't like voting for a lot of people. To me, it's a little bit like voting, you know, it's like voting in the Hamilton civic elections if you do that. Vote early, vote often.
But wait a second.
I like just a few names in my ballot.
Right,
I like
so how many
three.
You had three.
Yeah.
So you came up with three guys.
Absolutely.
That in your minuscule, feeble little mind.
In my feeble little mind.
Yes. Were more worthy than Barry Larkin.
I came up with three people that I voted for. I didn't say they were more worthy than Barry Larkin.
Well, they'd have to be if you vote for them, idiot. That's how this thing works.
That's not true.
It's
I voted
exactly
for Tim
true.
Raines because I think Tim Raines is more worthy than Barry Larkin.
Well,
yes.
Wait a second. Tim Raines, you're voting for Tim Raines because you were in Montreal covering the Expos.
Did not cover Tim Raines when I covered his
But still,
one
you
year.
Have that You have that je ne sais quoi.
No, I do not have that je ne sais. I took a shot for that the other day. It's supposed to make it go away. No, I do not have the je ne sais quoi. I voted for Tim Raines because he is statistically very close to Ricky Henderson. He's the National League's version of Ricky Henderson. If Ricky Henderson is in, he should be in as well. I voted for Mark McGwire to be obstinate. And I will continue to vote for Mark McGwire to be obstinate. And I voted for Larry Walker because he's Canadian.
There you go again.
Well, I'm just telling you.
You know what they'd say to you if you were in Quebec right now? Tu as pas de clou.
No, they'd call me a tête carré.
Tête carré, yeah.
Yeah. Then they'd say that and there'd be another word thrown in.
There'd be another word thrown in, starts with an M.
So I don't have no problem with Barry Larkin. I don't like to vote for a lot of people. Voted for three.
So if somebody called you a tête carré, would you say grenouille?
No, never. I would say something else. There is one word, and you know the word, that is well-known in French, English, Spanish. There's one word you can say, and you leave absolutely no doubt where you're coming from. It's the greatest, it's the universal word. And it ain't love, my friend.
I went into a convenience store in old Montreal one night.
Your first mistake.
Well, I'm in the restaurant
Yes.
across the street, and I want to, and they don't have, I needed a bottle of wine.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So there's a C store across the, yep, the street. And of course, in Quebec, they all have wine, right? They have a little wine fridge with, yeah, crappy cheap wine.
Plonk.
Yeah. So, but I got no choice. Right? Mm. So I'm in there. And I'm the only one in there. And the guy behind the counter is, look, it's like, you know, 10 o'clock at night. And he's snowing and he's, yeah, miserable, right?
He's going to give you attitude.
And he's going to give me attitude, and he's not going to speak English to me.
Of course not.
Right?
Even if he is English, he wouldn't speak English to you.
So, oh, I'm pretty sure he understood. So I go in, and I'm looking in the and I can see out of the corner of my eye that this guy's going to give me a time. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to play with you. So I start asking him questions in English about all the wines. And he just looks at me, doesn't say a word. So I walk up to the counter. I pick something, and I say, I want to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives me the amount in French, and I just, here's the credit card or the debit card, and we do the transaction. Mm-hmm. As I'm walking out the door, he says, loud enough for me to hear, M. Ted Carré.
Ooh.
And I just look over my shoulder and I say, M. Granouille. And walk up, and his jaw drops. Because I know enough French to get by.
Yeah, you only need a couple of words to make your point in French.
Are we allowed to swear in French? No, we can't.
Why not? Yes, we can.
Most of the audience wouldn't know what it is.
No.
We better not, huh?
Okay. You got some business.
You know, I got to do something, but later we're going to give away this jersey.
Raise some money. Good job for the Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah, we raised, what did we raise? 4,000?
That's sweet.
Ryan walks onto the set.
There you go. It never used to happen in the old days. Oh, wait a minute, we didn't have a set.
So here's what happened several weeks ago. I'm surprised you weren't there.
I've been reading this out in your absence, I want you to know. And I was working.
A bunch of us went to Ronald McDonald House.
Yes, I heard.
And we made dinner for some of the kids and the families. And I mean, you know, if you've got a kid there at Ronald McDonald House, you live there, the family lives there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get many opportunities to go out. You certainly can't go far away, no, in case something happens. You know, there's all kinds of limitations. So they don't get a home-cooked meal very, mm-hmm, often. So they have this program that they just started, and we jumped on it. What's it called? It's not home cooking. It's something like that. Do you remember what's called exactly? You got it? Home for dinner. That's what it is. So a bunch of us from here at the Fan went over there on a Sunday night, and we spent, I don't know, 3.5-4 hours. And we cooked dinner, and we washed the dishes and cleaned up, and it was fantastic. One of the more rewarding things that I've done. And Pinball Clements came over, mm-hmm, and joined us. So we all had a fantastic time. We're going to do more of it. So more to come. So a bunch of people from here donated their time. And we asked our fans to donate to Ronald McDonald House this year. We needed $500 for the dinner, and we raised almost $4,000. So we gave the balance to Ronald McDonald House. And we said every donation over 50 would be put in a draw for a bunch of prizes, including a grand prize, the Sidney Crosby limited edition framed gold medal jersey, which is right there.
And is really cool.
Jen, can we get a shot of that? It's donated by our friends at Frameworth, Brian Aaronworth,
mm-hmm,
et al., over at Frameworth. So we have a list of those who donated 50, and it's a fairly sizable list.
It is. It's a good size list.
So I want you to pick a number between 1 and 31.
1 and 31.
And then I'm going to count down this list, and that person's going to win the jersey.
Oh, you're gonna put it on me.
Mm-hmm. Just make it. You haven't seen the list. You don't know who's on this
list.
All
right. In honor of Derek Jeter, number two.
So congratulations to Dave Banks of Cambridge, Ontario.
There you go.
So Dave Banks is the lucky winner of this priceless Sidney Crosby limited edition Olympic jersey signed by Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, it is really cool. We've been looking at it for a couple of weeks. It's pretty cool.
It is very cool. So our congrats to Dave Banks, and our sincere thanks to everybody who made a donation. We hope you'll do it again down the road sometime. Now, we segued away from
the Hall of Fame. You were ripping on me.
Well, yes, because basically you're a homer, and you've got two former Montreal Expos that you vote for, and have eliminated the guy that everybody else thinks.
Well, that's not true. I don't believe he got 100% of the ballot. Well, I could be wrong.
I don't think he got 100%.
Did he get 85?
I don't know what I never saw the percent.
I don't know what he got.
How can you not know? I mean, it's something for me. It's not a big deal for me not to know.
Because I knew he was going to get in. If I didn't vote for him, I didn't.
86. Really
86. Okay.
It's pretty big.
That's pretty big. I'm one of 14%.
14% of the idiots who should have their voting rights revoked.
That'd be okay. I wouldn't.
You don't have to vote.
No, you don't.
Brent gave his up.
Yeah. I just.
Did he give up over Pete Rose or over steroids?
He gave up over steroids. I just
didn't want to be in that position.
Well, no, I didn't want to give up over steroids because somebody's got to keep voting for the steroid guys to get them in.
You want the steroid guys in, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Because you're a complete idiot.
No, because...
No, you are a complete...
Because the Hall...
You don't vote for Barry Larkin. You vote for two Montreal Expos.
I voted for
only
Canadian
one of whom
guy.
Really is deserving. Well, you voted for a Canadian guy for no particular reason other than he's Canadian.
Yeah, I think that's... But
Larry
I think
Walker
that's
had a
valid
very nice...
To keep them,
he had a very nice career.
I think it's valid to vote like that. I think it's valid to vote like that.
I have nothing against Larry Walker. I just don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And I think most people would agree. Tim Raines, on the other hand, I think probably is a Hall of Famer.
I think he'll get in. He got 48%. I think he'll, 5 or 6 years from now, I think he'll get in.
And I wouldn't have a problem with that. Now, why not Jack Morris, for example? Are you clouded by looking at his statistics?
Partly.
Because I do understand that.
Jack Morris, I think, is one of those cases where a guy is rewarded for longevity. If you take a look at his numbers, put them against Dave Steeb, and try to come up with who was the better pitcher.
Well, wait, but the Hall of Fame is at least in part about longevity.
Not necessarily.
It's excellence over an extended period of time.
No.
Why?
No.
Where's the bar for you?
I don't have a bar statistically.
No. How many years?
Here's the thing.
A guy pitches 8 years in the big leagues.
Right.
And 4 of those years is in around 20 wins.
I don't care
and
about
the
wins.
Top, among the top, well, is among the top pitchers
yeah,
in the game.
I don't care about wins.
Does he get in?
Not necessarily, no.
What about a guy who wins 300 games, but it takes him 30 years to
no,
do it?
No, no chance.
Everybody's got 300 wins is in.
Yeah, no chance.
Who among the 300 win guys would you not let in? Early win?
No, a lot of those, you've also got
early
to understand.
Win. Early win pitchily was 1,000.
Yeah, you've also got to understand
to get
a lot of the 300 win guys are from a time where they were used differently. And you can make a case that the 300 win guys that are in, most of them had peak years and were good, were really good for a sustained period of time. My argument with Jack Morris, here's the thing. And, you know, I'm hindered because, as I said, I don't use all my 10 votes because it's not the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of Very Good. And I admit that if you try to, you know, you can be too cute and voting for, there are people who say voting for Larry Walker just to keep on the ballot, that's cute, and you're treating it, you know, you're overanalyzing it. But here's the thing. People like Jack Morris, especially pitchers like Jack Morris, if you have to spend 10 minutes making a statistical case for a guy, does that, to me, that makes it hard to look at him as a Hall of Famer you should look at. You should look at this guy. This guy is a Hall of Famer.
Well, and that's the point. And this is the point that I've tried. And this is why you should be voting for Morris, because you had the great privilege of seeing him play. As did I. And that's why I say if you didn't see him play and you just look at the stats,
it's a valid point.
He's not a Hall of Famer. He's not.
No.
His ERA is way too high. But if you watched him and you know what Jack Morris meant, and you know that if you were an opposing manager in a big game, the last guy probably you want on the mound against you is Jack Morris.
See,
and you also know how many times, you remember how many times Jack Morris went to the mound in big games and won.
Yes.
Not the least of which was Game 7 of that World Series.
No, absolutely.
But that was typical Jack Morris. Before that game, we sat here and talked about Does Morris have another one of those? Because you know this is exactly his kind of game. 2 weeks ago, he might have given up 11 runs. Mm. But when you got to win and there's no option, Jack Morris repeatedly comes up with that big performance. You don't know where it comes from, but he's going to wind up beating you. He'll probably only beat you by one run.
Right.
So if we score seven, there he's only going to let you get six.
I think what hinders Jack Morris, and you talked about his ERA, similar to my argument, that if you have to sit down and take 10 minutes to explain to somebody why somebody is a Hall of Famer, and there's that stat that sticks out that makes you go, oof, ERA would be one of them.
Well, but I'd rather have the argument based upon my observations and understanding of the game during an era in which I watched, rather than try and refer to numbers and say, well, he's in because of these numbers.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, I've never even thought of putting Jack Morris on my ballot.
See, I remember, I mean, we didn't see a lot of Barry Larkin, but we knew who Barry Larkin was throughout his career.
Barry Larkin was the bridge between the Ozzie Smith-style shortstop and the slugging shortstop. He was kind of the offensive guy.
As I said yesterday, he changed, I believe, the way shortstop was played. Up until Barry Larkin, it was okay to play great defense and hit 220 with one home run.
That is true.
After that, if you were defense only, your general manager was looking for somebody who could do what you do and
that
hit.
Is true.
So Barry Larkin changed the game. Second base was changed by guys like Robbie Alomar, by Ryan Sandberg. There were other second basemen.
Yeah, Morgan, to an extent, a very good example, in the
70s. So second base had evolved. One time second base was the same thing as shortstop. Second base had evolved, but shortstop had not until Barry Larkin came along. Yeah. You mentioned number two from the New York Yankees. I mean, isn't Jeter prototypical of the shortstop that you want now? Not at this point in his career, but I mean, at his peak, the multi-tool guy who can give you offense, power, speed, defense.
Yeah, although I think
gives you all the tools.
I'm not a Jeter basher, but in fairness to a lot of people who are, I do think that his defense was always a little overvalued. But,
okay, I mean, he wasn't Ozzie Smith.
No. But it's true. I have no complaint with Barry Larkin making the Hall of Fame.
You should have voted for him. Next year, you'll vote for him. Won't be too late.
Next year, I'll vote for him. No, I won't. Next year, I got to vote for the steroid guys. I got to get the steroid guys in. Load that hall up. Bonds. Sosa. Right. Oh, it'll be great fun.
I hate the idea of even giving you a platform for this ridiculous analysis you're about to make. But go ahead. Tell me why a bunch of cheating bastards should be in the Hall of Fame.
Same reason that there are a bunch of guys in the Hall of Fame who never faced African-American, black, or Latino pitchers at the height of their career. The game has a lot of warts. It has always had a lot of warts. The Hall of Fame is there to represent the best players in the game of an era. The steroid era was not 1 or 2 years. It's part of the game's history. You put the players in, and you let the fans be the judge. And I tried to make this point this morning. You know this as well as anybody about baseball fans. You know, people are saying, give them an asterisk. No. Put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame. And every kid and every parent who goes into the Hall of Fame and looks at Barry Bonds' plaque, you know the dad's going to say, oh, by the way, this is the guy that used steroids. It's part of baseball's history.
Because
they were dominant players at an important time in baseball's history, and they deserve to go in. And let's face it, everybody was doing it. It's not like there's one, two, or three guys.
Well, you don't know how many people were doing it. I heard Wilner on the station yesterday, and it was beyond ridiculous. He made the assertion that 90% of the players in Major League Baseball were on steroids. He has no proof of that.
No, but I would think the majority of them were. But again, you're right.
You don't know that.
You're right. But I
don't know that.
No.
I can't presume because somebody... one guy was on steroids, 10 guys were on steroids.
Well, here's the thing. I think the same...
For the longest time, you would acknowledge there were many people who believed that hitters were on steroids, but pitchers didn't take steroids.
Yeah. Although, I was always told that there were more pitchers than hitters in steroids.
Well, you may have always been told that, but there was a constituency that believed...
That's true.
...the opposite.
You had to have Popeye muscles to be in steroids. We know that's not true.
Well, yeah.
We know that's not true. But here's the thing, Bob.
We have to go.
I don't think you can. Yeah, I just.
You're just getting too ridiculous for
I
words.
I think you have to just look at it, give it almost like a blanket amnesty, and vote for guys based in their numbers. But you've got more morals.
I won't take a guy out of the Hall of Fame who I suspect of doing steroids. Bagwell.
Right.
I'm not going to not vote for him because I think he took steroids.
Right.
But when I have evidence, even if it's not conclusive, mm-hmm. if I have evidence.
Enough evidence, yeah.
Yeah. Like a juror would have.
Yeah.
Don't know for sure, but I got to vote one way or the other.
Yeah.
If I think the guy's guilty of doing it, then I'm not going to give him a vote.
We differ.
And you know what? I like the idea of erring on the negative until otherwise proven, rather than the other way around.
There is an argument to be made for that, especially in the Hall of Fame.
I was going to say something else that was really profound.
You said enough profound stuff.
I was going to say something really profound.
You said enough profound
and
stuff.
And I forgot it.
Let me go.
I just have too many profound things to say.
Let me go.
You're easy, you know that? I like having you on.
I did 3 hours.
You can't even make an argument.
It's
weak.
Busy day. It's not my show.
What's the purple tie go with, by the way?
It works with this. There are people who...
I don't know.
Come on. Collarless shirt.
It's very she.
Maybe
that's
an old
Jeff
Montreal
Blair, who, curiously enough, hosts the Jeff Blair Show, starring Jeff Blair. It's on every morning from 9 to about 9:05, and then you find something else to do. Back in a minute, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, Mike Wan, will join us when Primetime continues on The Fan at Sportsnet.
Pittsburgh Steelers kicker Sean Sweezum joins Sportsnet tonight at 11 p.m. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's Primetime on the Fan Radio Network and in high definition on Sportsnet Coast to Coast. Bob McCown in the studio. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada will join us a little bit later on as the co-host. Nick Kyprios of Sportsnet. George Cortez, the new head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Hall of Fame offensive guard Joe DeLaMalur, ex of the Buffalo Bills. Ken Dryden, the Hall of Fame goaltender. And Scott Housen, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who blew up their coach yesterday. All joining us on the program later today. But first, the golf season is upon us. It is, it's chilly here, although not snowy. But it is that time of year when the tours begin around the world, not the least of which the LPGA Tour is set to begin soon. And joining us, the commissioner of the LPGA, Mike Wan, is with us. Hi, Mike. Happy New Year.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
I'm good. You're in Kitchener today in Waterloo?
Yeah, I'm Kitchener-Waterloo today. You're right. It's warm enough here. I think you could tee it up today if you had to.
Okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Perfect.
Your visit to Waterloo is regarding the new event?
Yeah, we're gonna be up here this summer and for the next few years with Manulife Financial LPGA Classic. We'll play it June 20 to 21 through 24, and we'll bring the best female golfers on the planet up here, and it should be a lot of fun.
Canada has always been a favorite spot for the Canadian women or for the women on the LPGA Tour. At least that's what we've been told. Do you get that sense in your time with the LPGA?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, the fan base here has been great. The television viewership of our tour from Canada is spectacular. We've got a lot of, you know, young Canadians on tour, so there's always a budding group of stars coming from north of the border. So it's just a great place to come play. It's also it's funny to call Canada, you know, a really far trip. I mean, I just flew here from Orlando to Toronto. Sure, a lot easier than going to Denver or LA. So from a player's perspective, there's a lot of excitement. Where it fits in our schedule next year, we'll play Kitchener-Waterloo, and then from there we'll play a Walmart event out in Arkansas, and then we play the U.S. Women's Open. So that 1-2-3 lead up is going to be there's going to be some high anxiety, I think, by the time we come back here in June, because the players will really be gearing up for the best.
Now you're down to what, 24 official events this year?
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I was just saying to the group driving over here, we're announcing our schedule tonight. So I guess I'll give you a little lead in, but we're introducing five new events for next year. So Manulife Financial Classic is one. We'll also add the Women's Australian Open, which is where we'll start our season in a couple weeks over in Australia. But we're going back to Toledo, where we used to go for a lot of years, and just brought back the Jamie Farr Toledo Classic.
I was going to say, yeah.
We're going to go back to Hawaii with the Lotte Championship. We'll play that in Oahu in April. We just brought back Kings Mill, which is a kind of a standard stop we'd been at for a lot of years, but haven't played there since 2008. So that's an exciting, you know, opportunity for the players. And so it's been a pretty fun year for us. 2011, our television viewership was up 38%. And when you get that kind of pickup in what's going on inside the ropes, then what happens outside the ropes tends to be a little easier.
Well, that's interesting, because the LPGA, by your own admission, you would acknowledge that there have been a couple of lean years, and there a couple of years ago, you lost a bunch of events, and certainly the economic downturn in the United States was a part of this, but there were other things that were suggested as being the reasons for it. It sounds to me like you may have turned a corner to bring this thing back to where it once was.
You're exactly right, Bob. I mean, we didn't. We're a small business. At the end of the day, we get a lot of media attention, but a fairly small business. And when the recession kind of hit, we lost some of our business. And I would say, in fairness, doing our own critique, we probably didn't turn the car when the road bend. And as a result, we had to kind of reinvent ourselves a little bit. And I'm excited about what's happened the last couple of years, because the good news is the product inside the ropes has never kind of gone away. I don't think there's ever been a time when there's been more young superstar names to throw around, whether it's, this next year we'll see Michelle Wee for the first time without 18 credit hours of Stanford traveling with her. So, almost her rookie year, if you will, outside of college. We'll see this new 17-year-old called Lexi Thompson coming on tour for the first year. And then you've got what I'd really call is the incredible chase pack of Suzanne Pettersson, Paula Creamer, Morgan Pressel, Christy Kerr, that are running down Yanni Sen, who's really kind of left the pack and is rewriting the record books for women's golf. So that's all been good inside the ropes. What's really happened in the last 12 months is everything outside the ropes has really gotten right. And it's exciting to see the amount of sponsorship we've brought on board, not just tournaments, but, automobile, official automobile and Kia, official airline and Frontier, official numerous things. And it's been a pretty nice time for us.
With the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, Mike Wan. Let's be blunt here for a second. And I've tried to be blunt, and I've taken some criticism for it. But here is my observation as somebody who plays the game a lot and has followed the game for, since I was a kid. One of the difficulties the LPGA Tour had, specifically in the United States, but I would say to some extent in Canada too, was the rise of the Asian player and the disconnect with the American golf fan, who, quite frankly, is used to watching white American ladies on the tour. And that has not always been the case. I mean, there are players from Europe, and there continue to be players from Europe who come. But quite honestly, they're white. And now, all of a sudden, these tremendously skilled and talented Asian players, many of whom have names that are unfamiliar to the golf fan, who have names that are very similar to one another. It's difficult to discern one from the other. They arrive on the scene en masse and are extraordinarily talented players. They aren't just there, they are competing on a week-to-week basis. You just rattled off the names of a bunch of prominent players on the tour, and to be honest with you, Yanni Tseng was the only Asian player that you mentioned. Does that continue to be, bluntly, Mike, a problem?
I think it's a great, and listen, there's no, everything you said is correct. And I think the interesting thing is that wave, if you will, as the media coined it, the Asian invasion, really happened about 2004 to 2008. And sure, it really was, it was fast. And to your point, it was impressive. What's really happened since then, I always tell people, if your impression, if Waterloo Kitchener's impression is that the LPGA Tour of 1972 is coming this June, they're going to be surprised. Because what I tell people is, if you get the Olympics in your mind, that's what we're going to bring. There'll be 28 different countries represented. Our top 10 players in the world come from 7 different countries. It's really a unique time. When they fly the flags of all the players that are in the field, it's amazing. Even the organizers will go, my gosh, that's a lot of flags. But we really do have players now coming from around the world. For a while, it was from a few pockets of places. But today, we've got superstar players from places like Malaysia and Thailand and, you know, obviously Australia, Canada, U.S. But we've really seen in the last couple of years almost another resurgence out of Europe. We got a ton of great new players from Spain and Sweden. So it's different. I think there's been waves. There was a wave when it was really a U.S. or maybe a North American tour. Then there was a time when it was really Asian influenced at the top of the leaderboard. Today, neither of those is true. We're in kind of this next wave, whereas if you took the top 25 players in the world, you'd probably say there's 12 different countries represented there. What's really happened is players from different parts of the world have taken the game up a notch, and it's forced everybody else to get better. And I think that's very Olympic-like. You know, for a while, a country might be really good at a sport, and then another country gets pretty good at it. And two things happen. Either that one country goes away or they get better. And what I see on tour every day is the level of competition worldwide is so strong. And it's an impressive thing. I've said this many times. 10 years ago, if you would have told me that I could become the commissioner of the LPGA and we would literally have players, fans, and sponsors from around the world, I don't think I would have believed you. Just golf didn't look and feel like that. Today, we literally have sponsors, viewership, TV program, TV rights, websites in virtually every country in the world, and that's it's a pretty impressive time for women's golf when none of that even seemed doable a decade ago.
Over the last 35 years that I've been doing this, I probably talked to every single one of the of your predecessors as commissioners of the LPGA Tour. At least most of them I can recall, and the last few, this question has come up, and I'll ask you this one.
Sure.
In your mind, how important is it for the international players, specifically the Asian players, to speak English?
I think the answer to that, I always tell the players, only they can answer that question. If their goal is to have a U.S. or North American following, if their goal is to have a pretty good media exposure here, if their goal is to have sponsors here, then that will be a given. You know, what's interesting is 2 years ago, we signed up a deal with a company out of Indianapolis called Language Training Centers. And all I do is I bring the language training group to every event.
Right.
I don't pay for any of the training. I don't decide what players learn a language. But what I found is when I got to know these players, you essentially have 150 of the most overachieving young women you'll ever meet in your life. And overachievers have one thing in common. They don't rest well. They don't relax. So if there's a rain delay, if you have a late tee time, if there's a TV delay, these players need something to do. And today there's about 55 players on tour learning another language. What might surprise you is plenty of Americans learning Japanese or Korean or,
really,
or another language as well. All of that is being paid for by them. I don't pay for any of that. All I paid for is to make sure that those trainers are available in the locker room, in the clubhouse, at their hotel. So the trainers are on the road with us. Totally up to you if you want to hire them. And so the neat thing is you'd have to go pretty deep into the LPGA money list to find a player who doesn't speak English well.
I've had a chance to see Lexi Thompson on TV. She's special, isn't she?
Yeah, she's freakishly talented for a kid that age. I mean, it's,
holy cow.
And, you walk up, she's 6'1". I think she averages about 280 off the tee. I mean, she's young enough to not know that a 6-foot putt's actually hard. And it's fun to watch her having fun. I was asked a question the other day on the Golf Channel, which is, what's your number one goal for Lexi Thompson? And I said, I just hope she has fun, because if she has fun, she could probably set some pretty serious records. Professional golf's a grind. It's a lot of opening and closing the door on your rental car and unpacking and packing, and in our case, a lot of frequent flyer points. And I hope she figures out the schedule that works for her and kind of wades into the water. There's no seems like we in the media and people like me, we always look to crown the next one. And as I've said to her and her dad and her agent, no rush. You just enjoy yourself with the game that she has. Winning and records will take care of themselves. I hope she just doesn't put any kind of added pressure of pace on that plan.
Mike, congratulations on the announcement in Kitchener-Waterloo. Thanks very much for taking the time today. We greatly appreciate it, and hopefully you'll stop by next time you're in Toronto.
Yeah, thanks for covering us. And when we bring the best players in the world, do me a favor, grab a couple of them and share them with your audience.
You bet I will. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, Bob.
Mike Wan, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour. Pretty impressive, as Mike said, and maybe he said the release hasn't even gone out yet, so maybe a bit of a scoop for what it's worth. 29 events on the LPGA Tour this year instead of the scheduled 24. They've added five new events, and that's pretty positive. There were 34 in 2008, or 38 in 1999. So they're getting closer to being back to where they were at the peak. And I'm not sure they even have to go back to anywhere near 38 events. For anybody, 38 events is an awful lot. Not that all the players play them. But the interesting thing is the women tend to play more than the men do. We'll come back and tell you what's coming up when Primetime Sports continues. You're listening on The Fan or watching on Sportsnet.
Pittsburgh Steelers kicker Sean Sweezum joins Sportsnet tonight at 11 p.m. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The marginally talented Neil Houston is the technical director of this program. How much time do I have here, Neil? Can you tell time at all? Okay, thank you. Neil's been with... How many years have you been with me? Do you know? Even remember? No, seriously, do you... It's above three. Is it more like six? When did Radar leave? Didn't you replace Radar? You'd have to figure it out. You can't even remember. Obviously, I've had a tremendous impact on you. You've had no impact on me, I can tell you that. Nick Kyprios of Sportsnet will join us in studio. Sorry about that. Oh, Elliot Friedman will co-host in the next hour. That's very exciting. So we got rid of Cox for today. We don't know where he is, but as usual, Damien comes in for one day, then takes 3 days off, then comes back for another day and counts that as a week worked. A couple of weeks ago, Scott Mitchell was on the program. And I mentioned George Cortez. And the speculation was that Cortez might have been offered the Hamilton Ticats job, but that he probably wouldn't take it because his demands would be too high. He would want too much control and too much power. Well, he took it. George Cortez is the new coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He'll join us. We'll find out why he decided to come back to the Canadian Football League from the NFL. And what the hell were those demands? Joe DeLaMalur, Buffalo Bills Hall of Fame offensive guard. More hot water for that league. Ken Dryden on what the NHL needs to do. And Scott Housen, the managing general of the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's coming up on Primetime.